everyone, and welcome to another episode of the Packers Podcast. My name is Michael Cohen, and I'm here, as always, with fellow beat reporter Bob McGinn. Our podcast is brought to you by the law firm of Cannon & Dunphy. We thank them for their support. Bob, good evening.
Hello, Mike. We have a Sunday night over here at my place.
The McGinn and, HQ.
Yep, and here we are, back from San Francisco, safe and sound.
Well, I didn't go, but yeah, you are.
Lucky you on that one, Mike.
It's two trips and two travel issues for you. We got stuck in Ohio after the non-Hall of Fame game, and you had a heck of a time yesterday.
Yeah, I didn't have any time, really. I knew I was cutting it tight. Left San Francisco, SFO at 5 a.m. Everybody else flew out of San Jose at a normal hour. Supposed to get to my house at 1:30 and walked in at 3:30, and that cut me back 2 hours. So I had to make a quick decision because the Saturday night earlier deadline, I decided not to watch any of the offense on that day. I watched the offense today and watched the defense and wrote. So got it done. I'm just glad I got it done anyway.
And we're hoping that these early snafus will mean that we can have smoother rides the rest of the way, because as I'm sure many of you know who live in Wisconsin, the later you travel into the year, the dicier it gets. But we had pretty good luck last year, didn't we, Bob?
We were like 11 or 12 for 12.
Yeah.
The rain in O'Hare got me, Mike.
Rain? Why rain? Not fog, just rain.
Any little thing in O'Hare will get you.
That's a terrible place, really.
A little rugged.
So it's Sunday evening, as you mentioned. This podcast will be posted Monday morning, so hopefully some of you will listen to it on your way to work. But today, early in the day, I watched soccer, and you caught a few minutes of it, too.
I did.
So it was Manchester City, which is my team, against West Ham United, your team. You're a proud supporter of the Hammers. You were down 2-0. You gave it a comeback. You got to 2-1, and you bowed out gracefully 3-1 in the closing minutes.
We gambled. We went for the equalizer.
You went for the equalizer, exactly.
Right, and lost it 3-1, yeah. So I didn't see a whole lot, but I saw enough of the Hammers to be proud.
And part of the reason why I watched soccer today and yesterday is because I was more or less confined to my couch, Bob. I'm wounded, as you might say.
So the decision to keep you home was a good one in retrospect.
Yeah, it worked out. It worked out for the best. I, as some of you know who have listened to this podcast, I have had my fair share of knee problems. I've had 4 knee surgeries, including 3 on my right knee, and about 3.5 weeks ago, my right knee just sort of flared up out of nowhere. I didn't fall, I didn't twist it, I didn't have any sort of precipitating incident, but it started to swell, and it got worse and worse and worse. I went to see an orthopedic, I had my MRI on Friday, and when this posts on Monday, hopefully I'll be getting a phone call around that time to figure out what the results are. But the hunch from the doctor was a torn meniscus, which would be my 4th. So hopefully that's not the case.
For sure. So tomorrow you're going to be at practice. Maybe it's time, Mike, you walk over across the way at Nitschke Field and find your a seat in the aluminum over there.
I might do it, because then I don't have to walk around.
Metal. Yeah. I mean, I think you can find a spot.
For those of you who can't follow what we just said, all the media stands on one side of the field at practice. And the patrons are on the other side, or the fans, I guess, because they get in for free. And Bob likes to go and sit on the other side just because
sometimes.
It's a clearer view at
sometimes.
Times. Sometimes.
Yeah.
And, you know, we don't have to jostle for position with, you know, various guests, marketing guests, et cetera. You get a clear view over there. And sometimes it's more advantageous than the vantage points that we get from our side.
And you don't have to worry about your back stiffening up, you know?
That is true. That is true. So maybe I'll do that tomorrow. Before we get to tomorrow, though, we got to talk about your musical selection. This one surprised me. First of all, I didn't think you had this in you. And second of all, definitely not what I expected today.
Mr. Barry White, huh? 1974, Love's Theme. Mr. Barry, quite a guy. I got his greatest hits. And what really... a sentimental value on this song. It came out in 74, and I think maybe a year or two later, ABC, which covered the U.S. Open all those years until fairly recently, that was their theme on their major golf. They might have had the PGA at that point, too. I think maybe they did. And they might have had the British Open. I think they did. Guys like Jim McKay was the what would you call him? Not the analyst. He's the not play-by-play. So to speak, yeah. Dave Marr, former PGA champion Dave Marr. And then the first guy who would on the course, Bob Rossi Rosberg, another former PGA champion. And they started it, and that was the theme song. So, and Mike,
when the show would start, or when the coverage would start on TV, that was what you would hear?
Yep. And there was no taping at that point. So, you know, I mean, my mom and I, back in the 70s, and early 70s, mid-70s, that's the first thing you'd hear, that Love's theme, man, Barry. And then, you know, Saturday and Sunday, there was nothing on Thursday and Friday, Mike. And the leaders might be on, well, by the mid-70s, they were probably picking them up around 8 or 9. So you'd hear that Love's theme, and man, the next stuff was great. Mr. Barry White, he died, at I think, in 2003 or 4, something like that. He had a 42-piece orchestra, Mike.
It's pretty cool.
Kind of a precursor to that disco sound. You got to love Barry White.
Not a bad choice, Bob. I'll give you credit for that one.
Thank you,
Michael.
You've
redeemed yourself a little bit.
Hey, I appreciate it. Yep. Okay.
All right. Now let's talk about some football. And we'll start with a couple articles that you wrote that will appear in the Monday paper. So some of you may have read these or will be reading these at the time this podcast comes out. But you wrote something a little different. You wrote about the scouting staff and, in particular, two guys with new roles this year. So sort of explain to us, you know, what you found out about them.
I mean, you know, the personnel department is kind of a forgotten element, Mike. I mean, this is the blood and guts of every organization, and they're just kind of out of sight, out of mind. And I've never lost track of these people. Obviously, I talk to many scouts around the league all year round, and they've been amazingly helpful. So in late mid-June, I think, the Packers announced the hiring of Charlie Peppra as one of their entry-level full-time scouting assistants, and John Eric Sullivan as director of college scouting. He got promoted from area scout. Sullivan's an interesting guy. He's 40, been here about 13 years, came out of the business world, played a little football at South Carolina. His dad, Jerry Sullivan, he's been in coaching 45 years, I think about 28 in the NFL as a wide receiver coach. He has an unbelievable reputation. He knows Mike McCarthy very well. They coached together in San Francisco that year in 04, I think it was. San Francisco in 05, yeah. So the Packers denied my request to interview Sullivan and Peppra. Silliness, petting, just ridiculous. I want to talk to these people about their background, and they're not allowed to speak for themselves. So I then spoke to John Eric Sullivan's dad, Jerry.
The receiver's coach.
Yep. And he told me a lot about his son, and it was a very illuminating interview.
So what'd you learn? What was interesting to you about John Eric?
Sullivan played. I mean, he's not a real big guy, but he was good enough to play wide receiver at South Carolina for 3 years and two more at Gardner-Webb. He spent a couple years at Fork Union, business world for 4 or 5 years, and then he wanted to get into scouting. And Jerry called a friend of his, Mark Hatley, who at the time was running the personnel department under Mike Sherman, who was coach GM. This is about like 02, and he got him in for an audition with a bunch of other guys. Let's just say 10 of them. That's just a guess, but the Packers, even now, I think they do this. Ron Wolf did it, and Ted Thompson did it. They take 10 guys, they give them a bunch of tapes, and they put them at a tape machine, and they say, hey, spend 8-10 hours, write some reports on these players. I assume they're players that the Packers know intimately, and they see if a guy can do it or not based off one day of writing, and they determine Sullivan could do it. He didn't get hired on the spot. He was then a summer intern, and then hired as a gopher at the Indianapolis Combine, and then hired. About 2 weeks after he got hired, Mark Hatley passed away of an unexpected sudden heart attack. That was a real shocker. Mark Hatley was a tremendous person and a really good football man. And so then he moved up. He was their designated scout to the National Scouting Combine. He scouted the Central Plains. He scouted the fertile Southeast. And now he got promoted to director of college scouting after his predecessor, Brian Gutekunst, got promoted to director of player personnel. I think Gutekunst probably still runs the board, still runs the college scouting effort under Wolf, under Thompson, okay? But for Sullivan, he's going to be moving to Green Bay now. I'm sure it's quite a bump in pay. And so we'll see how he does. Charlie Peppra, fans will remember Charlie. I mean, he started on the Super Bowl team in 2010 at safety. And the next year he started on a team that was 15-1 in the regular season, both because of injuries, but nonetheless, Peppra played a lot of good football here, maxed out his ability 150%, got wrung every inch of whatever he had out of it, a very stand-up guy with the media, and he played in Atlanta, he finished up in Dallas, took a couple years off. I spoke to Sam Shields, his former teammate. Sam's talked to him when he's been in Green Bay, and this was his dream. He wanted to get into scouting, called a bunch of people in the league that he knew, and ended up in Green Bay. So that's the two.
They've got two scouting assistants,
right?
Joe Huber and Charlie Peppra.
Right.
Would one of them be assigned to pro and one assigned to college?
I think they're both going to do a little both.
Okay.
Ted Thompson also said that Pepper's going to be doing some of the advanced scouting, meaning he will go to the next opponent right. the week before.
Right.
NFL teams all do that.
Like there was a Jacksonville scout watching the third exhibition game mm-hmm. for the Packers in San Francisco.
Right. So that was the one newcomer, one promotion.
And then there was a second story, a companion piece with it, sort of about how, you know, with Russ Ball being a prominent figure in this organization, that there's a few guys now that have the potential to move up and be GMs one day.
I led with Russ Ball because Ted happened to talk about him more than the others for whatever reason. Elliot Wolf, Ted said, is his number one guy in the personnel department. There's no question about that. And Elliot Wolf is 34 years old with 13 years under his belt, and he has a very, very bright future. Russ Ball is 56. He has a wide resume. He's vice president of football administration. Now, he's not technically in the personnel side of it, but under Thompson, during his 9 years here, he spent an awful lot of time in personnel.
And he's familiar with the game, too. He used to be a strength coach, you said, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
In college and then for 8 years with the Chiefs. He's coached in college. His brother, Randy Ball, who's now a pro scout for the Chiefs, his brother Randy was head coach at Western Illinois and somewhere else, and had he may have won a 1AA championship somewhere in there. So Russ is a football guy through and through. He moved into front office stuff 20 years ago, and he's been doing it ever since. You know, he's a cap guy, right? Does all their contracts. When the Packers decided not to bring back Andrew Brandt in 2008, they went to New Orleans and hired Russ Ball. So Ball is at every practice. I would say almost, eh, Mike?
Yeah, I've seen him just about every day at on the practice field.
From beginning to end.
Yep.
He spends a lot of time in personnel meetings, both draft and free agent. And he's also, I've been told, watched a lot of tape individually with Ted Thompson. Ball is according to a lot of people who know him, he's a quiet confidant kind of a guy. I think Mark Murphy and Ted Thompson, I think those three make an awful lot of decisions there. They run stuff by each other. Ball is just a kind of a smart, understated, humble guy. And so he's got a very prominent position. Now, he's never been interviewed. In the interview here, Ted Thompson said that he thought he had enough ability to be a general manager or a president. That's saying a lot. There's not many guys in the league who would have that ability to do both. That's very, very unusual. So Ball,
would he be more likely to be a president because his football background is not quite as strong as, you know, probably some other candidates?
Some GMs, you think about Mike Tannenbaum, Mickey Loomis, those were bean counter kind of guys earlier. They've kind of morphed into the total GM job, business and football. I think Ball could do them both. I mean, I think his Thompson said he can evaluate as well as a full-time scout. And that's pretty high praise.
That is very high praise, yep.
He's talked, for 9 years, he's talked about players with Russ Ball. He's been at Ted's knee. I mean, he's sat in draft meetings a lot. He's never been interviewed for a president or a GM job. And it's kind of astonishing to me why he hasn't. Russ Ball is off limits to the media. I believe that was a condition of employment. I don't know who he talks to. But that's the way it is. So he's up there, and there's a lot of things about that. Any other thoughts on the personnel department here, Mike?
Well, one of the things, and we've discussed this, did we discuss it? Oh, no, it was in your Q&A with Ted at the beginning of training camp. You know, you asked him some questions about guys interviewing at other places or being denied the chance to interview at other places. And so when these guys come up through the organization, you know, like the Packers, that sort of has that reputation of maybe not letting guys interview as openly as other places, do you get the sense that these guys know that if they want to move up, it's not going to be here beyond a certain point? And then how do they figure that out, you know? Because if they're not going to be allowed to interview on a completely open and free basis, how do they decide and how do they even go about, you know, getting somewhere else to advance their career?
Well, in response to that, Mike, you got to remember that many people have left here. So John Schneider was the first to go for a GM in 2010. They really were top-heavy at that point. He had come back from Washington and somewhere else, and then he had been back. So he was let go, and he got a huge job. I mean, they could have denied it, but they let it go. All right, John Dorsey was next, I believe. And Dorsey been here as a player and coach almost 30 years, player and scout. Dorsey had been involved with several other jobs, either elected not to interview or I don't know. And when the Chiefs and Andy Reid came along, I can't speak for Ted Thompson, but they let him interview and go. Reggie McKenzie went to the Raiders maybe a year after Dorsey. I'm not sure. I think that's about right. And again, for whatever reason, don't know. McKenzie had been there, started in 93, I believe, with Ron Wolf, so he had been there 25 years.
Well, you reported on multiple occasions that there's guys on this list that have been denied, correct?
Elliot Wolf was denied in Detroit for the GM job in December. People in the know over there and in the league thinks that that was his job to have. I've been told he's not happy about it. I think he would have gotten that job over Quinn in Detroit. Brian Gutekunst has been denied in Philadelphia and in Tennessee in the last two or three years.
For the same position or different positions, do you know?
Oh, I can't remember offhand. I'd have to go back and check that out. Alonzo Highsmith was denied in, Washington about 2 years ago when Scott McLuhan got that job. So it goes on and on. There's probably others that we don't even know about, Mike.
So you've seen a lot of guys and a lot of different structures of this front office in your time covering the team. You talked about, in you know, just a couple minutes ago, how when guys have been allowed to leave at times, it's because the front office is top-heavy and there's some ability to be flexible there. Do you think that Ted's denial recently of some of these guys is an indication that he doesn't think his personnel department is top-heavy?
I'm not sure. I'm not sure about it, Mike. You know, his mentor, Ron Wolf, said he never wanted to keep a guy who didn't want to be here. He let them all go interview, and he let them all go if they wanted to go. He had enough confidence in himself to replace them with equally capable hires. If I was running a team...
Oh, here we go. The podcast is going to go off the rails.
I've never said that in my life. I would adopt Ron's policy, just the way I feel about it.
Okay.
You hire good people, you're going to lose good people. You hire more good people, right, Mike?
Yeah.
All right.
Anything else with the scouts you want to talk about?
It's a big staff.
It is.
17 people on that list right now. The area scouts are quite young. They've lost other people. Sean Herrick went to Oakland. Lenny McGill went to Denver within the last 8-9 years. I mean, there's been others. I would have listed in the other room. I think it's a pretty good staff. I mean, you've got six guys with real titles. Thompson, Ball, Wolf, Gutekunst, Highsmith, and Sullivan.
Yep.
Sammy Seal was given a title about 4 years ago, but he was really the West guy. Tim Terry was given a title. And then you got about seven other guys who are area or pro scouts in-house. So it's an interesting group. Their peers around the league have told me over time that they think it's a lot of chemistry in Green Bay. I think guys, by and large, like working for Ted Thompson.
I agree.
I've heard this.
I agree.
Many, many times from personnel people. So that's the way it is. I can't think of... It's an interesting topic, though.
It definitely
is. I always try to take on top of it.
And it's interesting in particular for me because a lot of these guys, I've only seen them in passing. You know, we're not able to talk to these guys. They only talk once a year at the draft, and that only includes a small portion of them. Not all of these guys are up there at the podium. So I've read these names. I've seen these names. Some of these guys, if they walked by me, I wouldn't even be able to tell you what they look like because we don't see them very often. So it's kind of interesting to hear some of their backstories and things like that and the interworkings of what their day is like because, you know, fans, I'm sure it's the same way. They see an overwhelming presence of Ted in terms of, you know, media appearances and things like that, and yet he's only 1/17th of the staff.
And I just, you know, Mike, because of our years of seasoning on this beat, I'll just say that it wasn't always like this. I mean, I started when Bart Starr was running the show, and then it went on to Forrest Gregg, and then Tom Bratz, Dick Corrick. I'm thinking all the personnel directors or head coaches with power. And then, then Bratz was with Infani, and then Ron Wolf. And Mike Sherman and Mark Hatley. It's really changed since Ted Thompson. I mean, in the past, you would know all these scouts. Pretty much everybody in the media would kibitz with these guys on the practice field. Or, you know, you could call. You could talk like human beings, exchange information back and forth, you know. It's just the way it was. And that's the way the entire – well, I can't say the entire league, but it was like baseball. You know, you stand around the batting cage. Beat writers have told me this, and – everybody's just kind of all in it together, and you chit and you chat. And this current Packer administration does not see it like that.
I'm sure they're not alone, though. There's got to be other teams in the league that have it buttoned down as well.
There are, but I'm just talking about the one I cover.
True.
So?
Anything else with the scouts?
Regrettable, but no, I have nothing else to say about that.
All right, we're going to take a short break for a word from our sponsor, and then we'll come back and get into some roster discussion with the cut down to 75 and 53 right around the corner.
At Cannon and Dunphy, we're proud of our winning reputation. We're also proud to be the exclusive sponsor of the excellent Journal Sentinel coverage of our great football team. I'm Bill Cannon. To learn more about our winning team, go to our website.
All right, so now, Mike, we'll get off of the scouting department and we'll move over to the player department, okay? This is being taped Sunday night. We have a cut to 75 Tuesday at 3 p.m. and to 53 Saturday at 3 p.m. Then on Sunday after 11 a.m., they can add 10 guys to the practice squad.
And usually that's done by the end of Sunday, just about.
They yeah.
10 guys mm-hmm. done by the end of the night.
Yep. All right, so let's start in the order of that I insist on, right?
Yeah, so quarterback first.
Oh, no. All right. Like in basketball, the lineup should be written the two forwards, the center, and the two guards. I know the game has changed, Mike, but that's the way it is.
I don't think so. I think you introduced the star player last. You wouldn't introduce Michael Jordan first. He'd go last, even though
But if you're writing down your lineup in a scorebook or something, you go two forwards, center, and two guards.
Whatever you say,
Bob. Then the order of subs in order. Okay.
Whatever you say, Bob.
We go to wide receiver, Mike.
Okay.
All right. So there's 11 bodies here right now. They're going to keep 5 or 6. You don't see 7, do you?
I don't know. I just, 7 is so many. Because the bottom line is if they have 7 guys, all 7 aren't going to play. You know? Think about who's got to split these reps. You got Nelson and Cobb who are definitely going to play. You've got Jared Cook, who they've been using as a wide receiver, essentially. He's going to play. Montgomery will play. Aberderis will play. So beyond that, I mean, how... And Trevor Davis is going to play. So there's a decent amount of guys right there. And so how thin do you want to spread these reps, you know, going around during the regular season? Is it worth keeping a guy if he's only on the field for 4 snaps a game?
Not really. There's going to have to be a hard decision made here. And I, for the life of me, have no idea what it's going to be.
Yeah, I don't know either. But I think they're going to... Well, what do you think they're going to do with Janis and the injury thing? Or what would you do if you're running your team again, Bob?
So,
I would keep.
I don't know how bad the hand is.
If it's not, if he can be back within 4 weeks of the start of the season, so by game 5, I would keep him on the active roster. His special teams value is so high, both in coverage and as a kick returner. Just my opinion. I don't know. Yeah.
How's his value as a wideout?
Not good. I think, honestly, Nelson, Cobb, Adams, Aberderis, Trevor Davis. I mean, I know Janice has missed some time, but you could argue that him and Devontae were battling for least consistent of those guys throughout camp.
So I think we see eight guys have a shot. And you, as a wideout, would you put Janice eight?
What are we doing with Allison, Geronimo Allison?
Well, he's in the top eight.
I don't think I'd put him eight.
As a pure wideout, I think I would.
He's either seven or eight.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
And you know, really, it's so bunched, he could be like four, Mike.
Yeah, definitely.
We just don't know about people. Montgomery, we don't know about him. Aberderis, really don't know a lot. Adams, we don't know. Trevor Davis is a young guy. Allison's playing against a bunch of scrubs. We just don't know about these players, and they don't really know either. That's what makes it tough on them.
I'm interested to see how everything shakes out in terms of which positions they allocate spots for on the practice squad. You know, like this year we had two receivers and, you know, Ed Williams and Jamel Johnson, or there were two guys there. And then there was Matt Rotherham up front, and then you had two D linemen. So I just kind of wonder, you know, how is there a general formula they'd like to follow, you think, where everything is spaced out? Because it seems to me that they like to have one guy at each of the key positions.
I think they like wideouts because practice takes such a toll, and they want to have fresh bodies running these opponents' plays as best they can. So they like to have at least two because it's a running position. Harvey Binford can run, can he, Mike?
He can. You know, I kind of thought, I can't say I watched a whole lot of him in college, but I did watch Miami once or twice. I kind of thought Herb Waters would be a little bit louder than he was in camp. He kind of seemed to just sort of float along. I don't really remember him making a ton of great plays, but I don't really remember him, you know, messing up a whole lot either.
He played like his height, weight, and speed.
But
he had
a pretty good signing bonus, didn't he? He was one of the highest.
Maybe he was. $5,000.
I think he was close to $5,000, is one of the highest.
He's like 6 feet, 195,
and I remember
4'5", 2" or something.
And you do that story when you talk to all those guys. And I remember one of the quotes from the scouts, you know, paraphrasing here, was, you know, that's a good UDFA. That's a good get for the Packers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I haven't really seen it as much.
I agree. So the top bunch, it's hard for me to separate them, Mike. Adams, I mean, you saw the drop. You saw the really good catch on the slant the other night. The hitch, I mean, it was a really great run down the sideline. It was impressive stuff. He's been like that in practice, hasn't he?
Yeah, he definitely has. I think it's hard because there are certain limitations with him physically, and I think sometimes you can get wrapped up in that and not really appreciate that when healthy, he's got some skill, you know, some legitimate skill at this level. And there's no doubt that we've seen it on a number of occasions in camp.
Aberderis, he stayed healthy. Give him credit. He really has. He's played hard. He's done a lot of things on special teams, and he's healthy.
He's played a ton on special teams. He's taken reps at kick return, punt return. I don't think they've used him at gunner or holdup, which they did a little bit last year in the regular season. But, yeah, I mean, the health for him is the biggest thing. And now the question is, if he makes the team, can he stay that way until January?
Do you think Trevor Davis should have had that long takeoff route?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
It went off his hands.
Off his fingertips. Yeah. And if he dives, I mean, that's at his elbows, not his fingers.
Yeah.
I tell you, that deep ball and the one that Callahan threw to Devontae Adams, two darn good throws for a Division III quarterback.
They were. Allison, he's been separating. He's been getting open against the C-teamers.
Yep.
But he's done. He's had a fine camp.
He really has. Yep. He's done well for himself. And I know that, you know, he's impressed Aaron Rodgers. Rodgers has spoke fondly of him at times. He gives, you know, we've talked about this a number of times. He gives the Packers a different body type than what they have at receiver. I still think it's kind of unlikely for him to make the team, flat out make the team. I think the Packers would love to have him stick around in some form or another, but I don't know.
You know, one thing, too, now he's not a 4-7 guy. I've heard some talk about that. He's not. He, He's about a 4.64 at the combine, but at Illinois Pro Day, he's down in the high 4.5s, 4.58, 4.57. So at his size, he's not slow.
No,
he's not at all.
He's not. In fact,
his speed's okay for a big man.
Yeah.
Cobb, Nelson, all right, so let's move on.
Yep.
All right, tight end. So we got the top two, Rodgers and Cook.
Yeah, those are locks.
They're going to keep three, maybe four.
I think it's going to end up being three. I think they're going to have to pull from a number of positions because I think they have a lot of guys in the secondary that they like. I think they got to figure out what they want to do on defensive line. You know, they might have to keep an extra body there that ordinarily wouldn't make the team. So these players have to come from somewhere. One of them is going to be a quarterback because maybe they only keep two if Hundley gets healthy. We'll talk about that in a little bit. I think it's going to be three, and I think it's going to be Perillo.
You know, the first game, Backman played 48 snaps, Perillo 28. They gave him the big look against the Browns. Yep. And then the last two games has been Perillo 38 total, Backman 27. So they came off Backman there. Backman can run, but he just does not. You don't sense his, feel his presence, do you?
No.
Or in practice. We haven't seen that.
He had that one really nice catch in the back of the end zone, I remember.
In a practice?
Yeah, sort of like a leaping catch in the back of the end zone for a touchdown. And I remember saying to myself, that's the best play he's ever made in a Packers uniform. It was tremendous. You don't see it as much on a regular basis. I still don't know how comfortable he is, you know, offensively. He doesn't seem to move around with the same sense of self-belief that Perillo does. You know, the coaches praise Perillo for his routes, and, you know, that's one thing that's really been a strong point for him. And so he lines up, he knows where he's going, he knows how to get there. And I still wonder if Kennard's just trying to find himself a little bit, trying to figure out what works for him, how he can get open. And I'm sure the coaches haven't forgot, and it's unfortunate for him that he had that special teams error in the season finale against the Vikings last year.
Oh, yeah.
He had that mistake on the fake punt, I think it was, where he lost track of Thielen, lost contain on the outside, and that went for a huge gain. So they've been giving Perillo a long look on special teams, too. He's been on kick cover, which I don't think he ever was before, and he's been out there a lot. So I don't know. Do you think Perillo's maxed out? Do you think he is what he is?
Yeah.
Okay. Is Backman?
I don't really know what Backman is. I'm just not sure. Let's go to the O-line.
Okay.
So it could be 8, it could be 9, it could be 10. I mean, who knows? All right. There's no healthy bodies left.
There's not a lot.
They got 11 healthy bodies. And two of them have wrecked hands with clubs on their mitt. So you got Flores, who's going to get injury settled or something. He's, you know, had the knee. You got Josh. Josh
isn't healthy either.
So they got 14 guys right now. Lindsley's.
He's going to start on the PUP.
He's going. Yeah, he's staying where he is.
Yeah,
pup, right. And Flores is injured. So okay, and Walker. Walker was making a really good run until he hurt his knee right at the end of the Raider game.
I agree.
All right, so the locks. We got the locks, the five starters. You got Spriggs for 6.
I think those are the only locks.
At this point, I would agree with you. A flat-out lock, yeah. A conservative lock, yeah. 6 guys. Lindsley would have been, but he's gone. Okay.
Oh, I forgot about Lindsley.
Well, he's
yeah,
pup, so.
Right, but I would have counted him.
Right.
Yeah.
All right, so 6. So after that, I like the way Barkley's played the last 2 weeks.
I do, too. I think he's been much better, much more comfortable, and he's not bad at that center spot.
He played pretty darn well in this last game. Watched every snap he had. It was pretty good.
So when he joined the Packers, if I had told you that he might fit in best at center, based on his background or anything, would you have ever seen that he could be a decent center?
Yeah, just okay. Because of his size. He's undersized.
You said he's got massive hands, right?
Yeah, he does. That's right. 10 7/8. I forgot that too, Mike. He does, yeah. And, you know, he played left tackle at West Virginia. His arm lengths are is average. So center is his best spot physically, right?
And one of the things that, you know, for as much flack as he took last year, and he took a ton of it, the coaches have never questioned the guy's effort. I mean, that guy comes to work and he will go and he will give you what he's got, whether it's good, bad, or awesome. And so I think they respect that about him too, because they know how much heat he took from outside this organization last year. And the guy kept coming to work and he came back this year and he's done what he needs to do.
Let's face it, Mike. If he took it from outside the organization, he took a hell of a lot of it in that meeting room,
absolutely,
too. And from his teammates. I mean, these people want to win, and so he took grief everywhere. I once called him a conscientious man, right?
I believe so.
Yeah. He is, and so he's come a long way from that knee. And here he is on the threshold of making it for a fifth year.
What'd you think of Kyle Murphy? We know how highly we both thought of him in that second game.
Yeah.
What'd you think of him this week?
Really up and down. A tad disappointing. Not brutally disappointing, but it really wasn't a great performance by any means, right?
I agree. How about Lane Taylor? Another guy that at one point in this camp you said really needed to pick it up.
I'd say this was his best game. Personally, I don't think he's back to the level he showed when he had to play in the real stuff last year. Don't know why. Might be wrong. I mean, this stuff is open to interpretation, but so he's on the bubble too.
I'll be honest with you, and you may disagree, and you know, for everybody listening, Bob has a much more keen eye when it comes to line play than I do. I thought Lucas Patrick made some nice plays in that game.
I agree.
He's not a bad player.
He didn't. No, he's not. He didn't have many bad plays, Mike.
No, he is not a bad player. I remember writing down a couple times in my notes that one time I remember he was used as a lead blocker and it was really nice, and another time he just had a mauling type of play, and I remember thinking on a couple occasions, this guy's not bad. He is not bad.
Playing with a bad hand the whole camp, never took a day. An old lineman from Duke. I know there's been some, but there haven't been many in the last 20 years.
How do you think the injury, and again, it's hard to say because we don't know the severity, but how do you think the injury influences Josh Walker's potential standing?
We just don't know the extent of it. You know, we're 2 weeks away from final cuts. No, excuse me, 6 days, 2 weeks away from the first game. I was liking some of the things Walker did at four positions, theoretically.
He wasn't bad at right guard.
No, and he wasn't bad at right tackle.
I agree.
So, I don't know. Those are the dynamics. Kyle Stuck, the player from Northern Michigan and West Appear High School, you know, he came in, first player from West Appear, believed to be, ever have signed an NFL contract, got his feet wet. You know, he'll try to get on a practice squad here or somewhere else and try to make a career of it. He's a big square guy. He really is. Six locks and the rest are up in the air.
And I think it's important to point out that one of those locks, Spriggs, who's going to be your backup left tackle and your sixth offensive lineman, has a club. So if he still has that club in week one and somebody goes down, is he still the sixth lineman with a club? A lot of questions on that offensive line.
He did not play very well with the club this week. And he played probably worse the week before without a club.
He might have never played with a club in his life. That's got to be a huge adjustment.
Lucas Patrick's done it.
Well, yeah. He had the whole camp to do it, though.
All right, let's go to QB.
All right.
So, Hundley, what do we know about his injury?
Nothing new. He did not speak to the group of media in the locker room today. And it'll be interesting to see if he practices. I think that there's some real questions about what they do at this quarterback position if he is not ready or not all the way ready for the season opener. Because then what do? Do you feel confident going in with potentially Joe Callahan as your backup? It's a little bit of an interesting situation.
It is. They don't want to keep three.
No, they don't.
There's too much talent in that DBs and, you know, in the wide receiver situation with just the Janis question. They don't want to do it, but you don't want to have to go out with two and Hundley on a bad wheel and something happens to number 12 on opening day.
Now, we did talk about the relative infrequency with which guys get claimed when they are cut by teams. You know, it doesn't happen a ton. It does happen, but not a ton. Hundley would certainly be claimed.
Oh, yes.
So that's the reason why they might have to keep three, because if they were to let him go, he could leave a second.
Right.
I don't know. So, okay. Do you think that Callahan is capable of being a suitable backup for a one-game basis if they really needed it?
We're seeing him make plays against starters, or excuse me, against backups. The other night against the starters, he wasn't very good. Do I think he could go in and win a game or protect a lead? No.
I agree.
There's nothing to suggest that he can. They know him a lot better than we do. They know what he's like in those meetings. They know what his confidence level is. They know how he operates in the huddle. Does he engender confidence from his teammates? Don't really know this. He's had, you know, he's done better than I certainly ever thought he would.
No, I agree. He's definitely outperformed what I anticipated he would be coming from that D3 level. Some of the throws, as I mentioned earlier in this podcast, those two throws he made in particular jumped out at me, and he's got poise, too. He's not a bad guy.
No. All right, let's go to running back.
Okay.
So we have Lacy, Starks, and Ripkowski. They're all going to be here.
I agree. Although Ripkowski does have that knee injury, and we don't know too much about it yet. It was reported that it's supposed to be minor, but we don't really know what it is yet.
Don't even know when it happened.
That's true, too. We don't know when it happened.
All right. So,
what did you think of Burks in this most recent game?
Heck of a touchdown run. What did you think of Crockett in this game?
Not bad. The shoulder injury is going to be interesting for him. I believe that's what they said it was shoulder. It didn't look very good after the game, during the game. It was sort of hanging a little bit as he came off the field, and then he looked to be in some pretty decent discomfort on the sideline. I don't know if that will play into their minds at all, because they don't traditionally rely on the third running back that much, and they could certainly make it through a game with just Lacy and Starks if they had to. In other words, if Crockett was going to miss a week or two, you know, they could get by with two guys plus Ripkowski. I don't really know. You definitely think that it's Burks or Crockett, though. You don't think Brandon Ross has done enough to... Okay.
I agree with you there. Maybe they'll keep three.
Three total? Ripkowski, Starks, and Lacy? They could.
And play Cobb and Montgomery in the backfield.
They could. That would free up an extra space to use at the quarterback if they needed a third, or to steal a roster spot in the second half. The back half of the defense with, you know, the secondary and everything.
So Burks maybe can win a spot at Kansas City, and Crockett can fight to retain a spot, depending on this injury. I don't see Ross. Do you?
No.
Okay.
And I don't see Squirewell.
No, absolutely not. No way. Okay. So now we go the traditional order. We go to the D and the D line, right, Mike?
Yes, the traditional order, as I've been schooled many times.
All right, we got Mike Daniels, number one. Right now, the second best player is Guyon.
Agreed.
He's got a knee injury.
Yeah, a little bit. Also supposed to be minor, and we don't know when that one happened either. So it'll be interesting to see who practices. Well, I shouldn't say it'll be interesting, because a lot of these starters weren't going to play Thursday night anyway. So they've actually got a decent amount of time here to heal up. The problem is they don't have a lot of bodies in total, and we'll get to that in a second.
All right, so number three performance is Mike Pennell.
I agree.
And he's gone for a month with the suspension.
You could argue that Pennell and Guyon have been pretty close.
I take Guyon.
Really? Okay.
You think it's close. All right, yeah, okay. All right, so now we go to number four, and that would be Kenny Clark.
Okay.
What about Kenny? He's got an injury thing, too.
He's got a back injury. He spoke today, described it as tightness in his back. Doesn't think it'll put him in any danger of missing the season opener against Jacksonville. The reason he did not travel to San Francisco, he didn't want to sit for 5 hours on a plane, have his back tighten up. Same thing on the way home. So he claims that it's minor. If that's the case, I still don't think he's going to play this week. It doesn't really seem like the Packers would gain anything from putting him out there with, you know, potentially a little bit of a muscle pull or whatever the case may be in his back. So it's an important day for Lowry, I bet, though.
Dean Lowry, was he a fifth round or fourth round?
Fifth.
Fourth. Yeah, I've screwed that up, I think.
I think he's a fourth. No, he might be fifth because Martinez is fourth.
Okay. Well,
the draft was a while ago, folks. It's hard for us to remember here. Let me see.
Lowry's played 47 snaps in three games. Has there been anything memorable? No.
Not really. No. He was a four. Okay, I was right.
Four, huh?
He was a four.
He's playing back off the ball, Mike. 2 or 3 feet off the ball. You've seen this.
A little bit. I guess that didn't really register with me that
every
much.
Every snap. I don't really. I'd like to ask him about it. It's like the old Tom Landry Dallas flex defense. Oh, Harvey Martin and Too Tall Jones. But they're inside people where Bob Lilly were off the ball to read and react. But Packers don't want that. I don't know. He gives effort. He's got great size. Some people think he's going to make plays, but he hasn't right now. He's feeling his way.
What have you thought of Ringo?
So-so. You?
He doesn't really bring a whole lot. He's got to be used in very specialized situations, sub-packages where he can rush on the inside. I don't know. I don't know what the coaches think of him. But I've said this before on this podcast. I expected more from him production-wise, yeah, based on the positive feedback he received from teammates and coaches all last year when he was on the practice squad.
So it was interesting. They cut B.J. McBride right at the start of camp. He was playing for the Niners the other night. All right, now there's three free agent 1-3 techniques, right? In order, I'd say Brian Price. Ty, Anderson, and Cooter. Demetrius Anderson, Tyler, Cooter.
Might put Cooter a smidgen ahead.
As number one or number two?
No, number two.
Cooter could be number one of those three guys.
Think so?
Possible.
Okay.
I think it's close. I think all three of them are close. Are they good enough to keep any of them?
No.
This is where a job could be won.
Yep.
Somebody could go out and kick butt over a center in this game, destroy people, a tackle or two for loss, a pressure or two, show hustle to the sideline, and win a job. He could. They're looking for a guy here.
Oh, no doubt. Absolutely. Brian Price is the one that I think, you know, we both agree could be number one. At least to me, he has been. So that would be the guy that I would sort of earmark as most likely to make the roster. But here's another question. Just because they make the roster, does that mean they're good enough to play? They might be kept just from a pure body standpoint with Pinnell suspended.
True.
They don't have a lot of guys.
True. All right, should Ted Thompson go out and make a move, either a waiver claim or a trade? It's getting to the point they got to be thinking about this very, very seriously. Yeah.
I would say much more likely to make a waiver claim than a trade.
What do you mean? He makes a trade every 6 years. Smith, the safety from Jacksonville, was the last player acquired. That was in October of 2010.
Not Ryan Grant?
They won a Super Bowl that year. Grant was the huge trade on the final cut in 07.
07, okay.
Yep.
I don't know.
What's that Smith's first name? I'm going to grab the press guide, Mike. You keep talking.
Well, you're asking about guys that I don't remember. In 2010, I was still in college. I had just recently started college, actually. So that is before my time. But I don't know. I guess, so if he puts in a waiver claim, you know, there's going to be guys around the league, mix of veterans and young players for sure.
Anthony Smith from the Syracuse Orange.
Anthony Smith?
You
that
remember
was before,
him?
No, that was before my time.
That's him.
Okay.
Came from Jayville. Played in a game or two.
Okay. Before my time.
Okay.
So I don't know. So, okay. Let's say he makes a waiver claim, argument's sake.
Yeah.
Think he's more likely to go with a guy that's about 24, 25 years old or a guy that might be 28, 29, 30?
24, 25, knowing Mr. Thompson.
I agree.
And you know they're watching a lot of tape all this week. For weeks they've been watching D-line tape, probably more than any other position.
Yeah, that could be true.
If we see they have a problem, they've known they've had a problem for months. It's the way it is. They don't ever talk about it, but they do. They're not dumb people.
All right, what's next?
All right, linebacker.
It's a mess over here.
Let's go inside.
Okay.
All right, the locks are Martinez and Barrington.
You've elevated Barrington to a lock. When you did your category categorization last week. I think he was on the fence.
He played 23 snaps. We finally saw him play. Only 9 the week before and 0 the week before that. So
I thought he wasn't bad.
No, not great, but I think he's enough. They got to have a body.
Right. Barrington and Martinez locks. I agree.
All right, Ryan, what do you know about this hamstring?
He warmed up before the game, so obviously that's a good sign. I would assume that it's not too bad. If they had him warm up, if they had him fly all the way out there. So to me, that, I mean, it's an issue for sure, but I don't think it's one that would put his roster spot in jeopardy.
All right, put him on the team. That's 3.
Okay.
Number 4.
What do you think of Carl in this most recent game?
He was okay.
Mr. Carl Bradford.
He was okay.
Did you notice that he took reps at dime linebacker, which he had never done before?
I did.
It was interesting.
That was a plus for him.
That's, I mean, they're trying him. They're giving him every chance.
So Joe Thomas played well.
So Joe missed the game with, you know, a lot of people thought it was a shin injury, myself included, because that's what he had last week. He was nicked up, had the ice bag on his shin. But he told me today in the locker room that it was not the shin. It was for a muscle injury in his lower body, and he said he forgot the name of the muscle. So it was too long and too complicated. But he said it's very, very minor. He expects to practice Monday and Tuesday. Didn't think it was anything significant at all. Said he was fine. So I don't know. Thomas has played well. I think that Thomas's experience as the dime linebacker might give him an edge. Because Barrington was in line to play the dime linebacker 2 years ago. I haven't seen him take a single rep, let alone snap, at dime linebacker in camp. Then you've got Jake Ryan. He's not playing the dime linebacker. Then you got Blake Martinez. He has been playing the dime linebacker. But this is a rookie. This is a guy that has a ton on his plate. He's been offered plenty of opportunities on special teams as well. So he's got everything to focus on right now. And I just wonder if they might take a little bit off his plate and have Joe Thomas play the dime just for a couple weeks, 1, 2, 3, and then see if Martinez is ready to move into a bigger role. Yeah. So that's the only area, well, special teams too, I guess. Thomas is a better special teams player than Bradford, but, man, Bradford's made some plays with his physicality.
True. Boniquez Brown has been a disappointment in the last game or two, especially this week.
Yeah, he's tailed off.
Yep. I still like Derek Matthews, the way that kid hits, but he just hasn't been here long enough. So that's inside. Now let's go outside. Huh?
Okay. Matthews right. And Peppers and Perry locks.
Correct. Dayton's a lock.
I agree.
Right now.
Yeah.
Barring injury. All right, number 5, it's Fackrell.
And he's a lock.
Yeah, he is. He's a third-round pick. I guess he probably always was a lock, barring injury. So Fackrell did some good stuff against some scrubs.
He did.
The scrub wasn't that bad. That Kelly's not that terrible.
It was his best game, though.
Oh, yeah,
definitely his best game. He started to win a little bit in the fourth quarter, which he had not done.
So he's 5. Now, do they keep another one?
Yes.
All right, so we have Jayron Elliott, Laurentia McCray, and Reggie Gilbert.
What did you think? So we've discussed the similarities between McCray and Elliott. What did you think of those two guys in the most recent game, given Elliott was out there for a shorter period of time due to the hamstring injury?
Yeah, Elliott never played from scrimmage. You know, so
never made it out there.
No. So we got 43 snaps to go by with Elliott, and it hasn't been great. McCray, he had a pressure or two.
He did.
He goes hard.
And he's on every special teams unit as well.
So they kind of like him.
They definitely do, yeah. And Reggie Gilbert's not a bad player. Didn't play, I think, as well this week as he did to the last game. I thought, anyway. I thought this game against the 49ers was just a little step back. Not in a bad way. Just I thought he played out of his mind a couple weeks ago. So this is just sort of a regression to the mean for those math geeks out there.
Pretty good player. He's practice squad at least.
So, okay. Has Gilbert... How would you assess Gilbert's game performance relative to Elliott, Fackrell, McCray?
Nobody's way ahead of the others. Nobody's way behind the others.
In
games, from scrimmage, those four guys.
There's not much separation.
I don't know. I agree.
Okay. And the reason I say that is not because I think Reggie Gilbert has a legitimate chance to make the team, although I guess he could. But I just think that it's important to point out that from Elliott all the way down, those last four guys, there's very little to separate them with what they've done in camp so far.
Let's go to the DBs.
Okay.
Cornerbacks, locks, Shields, Randall, Rollins, and Gunter.
I think Gunter's a lock. I do.
Do you?
Yeah.
I don't know that he should be, but I think he is. Okay. I would have Goodson fifth. I mean, I know
agree.
You. Okay.
No, I agree.
All right, but he's out for a month. All right, number six. Right now, I see Hawkins. Dorian, if he's healthy, I got him next. And then Robertson, Daniel,
so
next.
You've dropped Daniel down to eighth.
Yeah, and then Gatewood and Jetty.
What has dropped Daniel down in your mind?
I just don't see him making enough happen, Mike. I mean, I love the 6-1, the 203. The speed's okay. I just see some limited quickness, some limited awareness. He's not bad, but this is a really good group.
I agree.
And I would give to Hawkins and Dorian a slight edge.
Dorian's got an injury.
Yep.
He's got that hamstring problem. I asked him today in the locker room what the MRI said. He wouldn't tell me. So I don't know. He said he's hopeful to practice this week, but at other times in the conversation, he didn't sound as optimistic. It'll be interesting to see if he's out there.
And personally, I really kind of like Warren Gatewood from Alcorn as a practice squad guy. I like his height and I like his toughness. And Randall Jetty from UMass, he's only played the slot in this camp. I mean, I've never seen a guy never really play outside, but he hasn't. He's a slot guy. He's got some instincts, this guy. I can see where he made a bunch of picks. Martha's Vineyard, eh, Mike?
Yeah.
Jetty's not that terrible. So there's 10 names on that list.
All right, last group. Well, I guess we got to do specialists too. So second to last, safeties.
All right, so Clinton Dix, Burnett, our locks.
Agreed.
Burnett with the injury.
Yeah, back injury.
Yeah.
Mike McCarthy said there's no long-term concern with the medical staff there.
All right, is Micah Hyde the number one whatever, punt returner?
Yeah, he has been.
He's not the number one kickoff returner.
He's been back there. They've been doing two guys back there.
So
it's been him and Aberderis or him and Davis.
He's done some good things in that linebacker in a 4-2.
He has.
He had a great pick against whoever that was, Oakland? Yep.
RG3. No, it was Cleveland.
Yeah. Yeah. Best defensive player of the summer? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I agree.
Okay, looks like he's three.
I think so.
He's not a lock, Mike.
He's not
close.
A lock, but I think he's close, yeah.
All right, Banjo's been four last year, the year before. He has been four.
I think the injury could be...
He's done nothing to hurt himself other than get hurt.
Right.
You agree?
I will say this. Saw him in the locker room today. Didn't talk to him.
Okay.
He said he was late for a meeting or was going to be late. He jogged out of the locker room. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean anything, but if his hamstring was really, really bad, I don't think he would have been jogging.
Okay. Zook has called him the team's best special teams player.
And he was their captain in the playoffs last year, special teams captain.
He can run, Mike.
He really can.
4-4-2, 4-4-3. He's the first guy down. And he is a pretty darn good safety, too. He will hit. He knows what he's doing. He's one of the more committed, smart guys on that defense. He's got a lot going for him.
I remember last week I asked HaHa Clinton Dix what made Banjo so valuable as a safety. And he said that the guy is so smart that he's never in the wrong place. He knows exactly where he's supposed to be, and he gets there. He might make a mistake. He might not have the ball skills of other guys or things of that nature. But Clinton Dix said he's always where he's supposed to be.
The only negative I see on Banjo is his height.
I agree.
He's 5'0", he's 5'10 on the nose.
I agree.
All right, now, Kentrell Bryce. Man, what a free agent signing this has been, Mike. You know, the knock from a couple scouts was he wasn't that physical, but last night or whatever the 49er game was, whenever that was played, the guy was headhunting people. He was drilling people. Man, that was physical. That was quite a show, wasn't it, Mike?
And he's healthy.
He's healthy. 29, Kenny Stills. That's way in the past, but Kenny was a headhunter. Kenny would run 4-7 on a good day. But Kenny went after people and drilled him, Mike, from a Wisconsin Badger, and that's kind of what Bryce is doing right now.
Has he shown enough to get claimed if he gets cut?
In a Hollywood minute, they can't do it. He's way too good for that stuff. They know that. Way too good, Mike.
What about Evans?
Bryce, and we know, just so everybody remembers, Bryce ran the 4-4-3, 42 vert, better than anybody, 300 guys at the combine this year. He did not attend, you know.
11 broad jumps.
That's just like Jalen Ramsey numbers. All right, now we go to Marwin Evans. Kid from Milwaukee, Oak Creek High School, 5'11 and a half, 208. Where this is a tribute to the Packers scouting department all the way.
No doubt.
He does terrible on the Wunderlich. We got into all that. We won't rehash that. He hits like a mother in that Oakland game. And then he makes the play off the hash in this last game on the pick. He had another hit in the box. I mean, he's a pretty good football player.
Were you writing when he made the interception, or did you have your eyes up on the field at
no,
that point?
No, I was writing.
So you missed it.
Yeah, and then I looked at the TV, and my tongue dropped on that one. Marwin Evans, he's one of these hybrid safeties you want to develop. He'll hit people, and he's got good size, and he was a cornerback 2 years in JC and 1 year at Utah State before he got moved to safety the last 2 years. He has open field cover ability. They tried to do this with Sean Richardson, Mike, before your time, for 4 years. But Richardson, yeah, he had some straight line speed, but he was immobile out in space. I mean, he'd get exposed constantly. Evans is not going to get exposed.
Has he done enough to get claimed?
Flip a coin.
So okay.
But, it could change after Thursday night,
you
right?
Said that, yeah, you said that Bryce is good enough to get claimed in
yes.
a second. So here's my question. Just because he's good enough to get claimed, does that mean he definitely gets kept? Because we've talked about how they need to steal positions here and there. I mean, if it comes down to a situation where, you know, I'm not saying this is what it could be, but what if it's, you know, a wide receiver versus him? You know, what if it comes down to, you know, Jeff Janis versus Bryce, or you know, Aberderis versus Bryce, or Josh Hawkins versus Bryce? What are you thinking?
I just think
has he done that much? And would they play him?
Bryce has got to be here, Mike.
Okay.
He's here.
So you think he's a lock?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Is he going to fall apart? Now, I know he's done this mostly against backups, not the other night. He played against ones the other night, and not very good ones for the Niners. But could he fall on his face in Kansas City? Maybe. Evans is really an interesting cat. Do you just load up on DBs? You know, I don't know.
They can't keep five. They can't keep six. I don't think they're going to cut Banjo.
He's hurt.
Clinton Dix, Burnett, Hyde, Banjo, Bryce.
You know, and Whitehead's not that bad either.
No, he's not.
Nope. He's just not as big and not as fast.
And he happens to have come in a year where two guys exploded that many people didn't think were going to explode.
We're getting long in the tongue here. Let's go to the special teams.
Yeah, real
okay?
quick.
We're not going to settle this.
Is Lovato going to be the long snapper on opening day? I say yes.
Yes.
Okay. Kicker?
He's not a lock, though.
It's true.
Yep.
Kicker? I think Crosby won the job.
Yep.
Punters? I don't know.
We don't know. I have nothing to add right now.
Yeah, the punters, it's too close.
Yep. All right.
All right, well. This podcast has gone way too long. This is probably the longest we've ever gone. We're at an hour and 3 minutes. So, Bob, I think we're going to have to skip the questions.
I think so. All the questions are about all the stuff we just talked about.
That's
the
true.
Roster, right?
That's
There's
true.
Nothing more to add.
Sorry, guys. If you submitted one, please submit one again, and I promise we'll exhibit better time management skills in the future.
We're making up for it with more Barry White.
All right. We'll talk to you guys next week.